I'm Joe Gatto.
I'm Steve Byrne.
We are Two Cool Moms.
We certainly are.
And guess where we could find us now?
Oh, I don't know. The iHeart Podcast Network?
That's right. We're an official iHeart Podcast, and I'm super excited about it.
I am too. I thought Two Cool Moms was such a fun podcast, but now it's even more funner and cooler and heartier.
That's right. It's more iHeartier.
I knew it! Check your heart rate. We're here at iHeart.
Yeah, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts or on the iHeart Radio app.
This is Michael Rappaport, and I have been professionally podcasting for 10 years. The podcast game has changed so much, and if you're looking for the most disruptive podcast in the world, then subscribe to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast today. We're talking sports, politics, pop culture, entertainment, and anything that catches my attention. Listen to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. You know, if you've been following me on social media, you know I love to cook, or at least try, especially alongside some of my favorite chefs and foodies, like Benny Blanco, Jake Cohen, Lighty Hoik, Allison Roman, and Ina Garten. So I started a free newsletter called Good Taste to share recipes, tips, and kitchen must-haves. Just sign up at katiecouric.com/goodtaste. That's KATIECOURIC.com/goodtaste. I promise your taste buds will be happy you did.
I'm Dr. Laurie Santos, host of the Happiness Lab podcast. As the U.S. elections approach, it can feel like we're angrier and more divided than ever.
Please stick to policy. Don't get personal.
But in a new, hopeful season of my podcast, I'll share what the science really shows, that we're surprisingly more united than most people think.
We all know something is wrong in our culture, in our politics, and that we need to do better and that we can do better.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
History is a funny, funny beast. It's a funny beast because, well, we only learn our side of it, don't we? Don't we only learn one side of it in general? And even if we learn multiple sides of it, one side generally, it's all that sticks with us. I mean, after I'm done with the history portion of every show, I have no doubt you can head down to the water cooler, pour yourself a cup of Joe in the company kitchen, and probably give at least a portion of my narrative to a vaguely interested coworker about what I talked about that day. Hey, you learned some things, I learned some things. Oh, this is what Jesse had to say about Genghis Khan. Did you know this about World War One? It's normal, right? But eventually, because of the way our minds work, because of the way memory works, we forget most of that stuff, at least the details of it, and you will walk away from that, from everything, with just a concept. Not necessarily the details. Look, I do this every single day. I don't remember the details. Do a new one every day. And it's me speaking. It's my thoughts. And I forget the names and dates and locations and things like that. So you walk away with just a narrative. That's what you walk away with. Producer Chris, what's your narrative for Genghis Khan and the Mongols? What do you think about them when I say that? Great general and conqueror. Think about how many Mongol stories we've talked about, all the different sieges and sackings and crazy things, and his other generals, and I mean, you could talk about them endlessly. What's it boiled down to after a while? Producer Chris sits here every day, and listens to me talk about it. Genghis Khan, great general. That's what happens to all of us. Your history, your knowledge of everything gets narrowed down to the big things you took away from it. If I brought that name up to somebody else, if I brought it up to you, something else probably would have stuck with you, depending on what you loved about it. Horse archer. Rapist. Genocide. Religiously tolerant. Whatever you took from it, right? So what did you take? What do you know about the American Revolution? Chris, who's our oldest ally in the United States of America? France. Who would you have said is our oldest ally? We have a narrative in this country. We have a narrative about France. We have a narrative about ourselves. We have a narrative about Britain. We have a narrative about the American Revolution. And what's funny is, like pretty much all narratives, yours and mine, it's not really accurate. What's our narrative about France? You know. Duh. Gutless cowards. Useless. A French rifle? Never fired, only dropped once. Prior to World War II, France's military history is disgustingly good. What's your narrative about Britain? They're our ally, right? What's your narrative about the American Revolution? Wow, this huge world battle to break off from the British Empire. Do you know what the American Revolution was to the British Empire? It was one of several relatively minor skirmishes for them taking place all over the world between them and France to see who would rule the world. We think of the American Revolution as this is where we were conceived, the birthplace of freedom. This is the beginning. Well, yeah, it was our beginning. It wasn't that to Britain. Not at all. Britain was, in fact, more interested, get this, in holding on to Jamaica than they were holding on the colonies. Did you know that? You're curious why? Because Jamaica was rich in sugar cane. And remember how all the talks we've had about trade and how big global trade was sugar. This is long before the age of all the sugar substitutes and the planes back and forth. Sugar was gold. Hugely, hugely profitable. Now, the American Revolution. What do you know? What's your narrative in your mind about the American Revolution? Granted, the thing is, the amazing thing about this show is at some level, you're a history lover. Even if you just like the 30,000-foot view I give you, or you're one of the more detailed people and you know a lot of these stories, or you dig in after the fact. But the great thing is, so many of you know way more about these topics than I do. So if you're not one of those people, what's the narrative on the American Revolution? Well, we had these British soldiers all over the colonies, and we, each and every American, stood up and fought against that occupying British force, and we threw them out. Do you know there were virtually whole states that stayed loyal to Britain throughout the American Revolution? States like New York? Did you know there were entire units, and I'm not talking about a platoon, I'm talking about 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 man units, which are gigantic units for American Revolution size, that were colonists who were loyal to Britain? They estimate the numbers are about 33% of America fought against Britain. Virtually the same amount fought for Britain. The other 33%, in case you're wondering, didn't really care. Just leave me out of it. Let me know whenever y'all work it out. Narratives are a funny, funny thing. And the French, do you know what happened at Yorktown? I mean, everybody, you can picture the end of the movie, The Patriot, right? We got the ships shelling Yorktown. Cornwallis is in there. He refuses to come out. So on and so forth. Here's what actually happened at Yorktown. One, Cornwallis was not the head man in charge of British forces in the Americas. He was the head man in charge of the kind of southern British forces, and that was considered the South, Virginia. But the big man in charge, his name was Clinton. He had a huge 16,000-man army in New York City. George Washington wanted New York City and wanted it badly, badly. And something you should know about George Washington is your narrative about him. I mean, some of it may be wrong, but a lot of that crap is true. That guy was a brilliant, brilliant general by all accounts. They study him internationally. That's not just an American thing we romanticize. Oh, we got him on the dollar bill, old George. No, Washington was a stud. A lot more violent than you like to think of him. You know, I know how you picture George Washington. How do you picture him? Hang on, I'll explain.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so? Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
ExpressVPN. You need internet security. I know it's no fun to talk about this stuff. It's not. I don't enjoy getting on here every day and pointing out the potential security concerns in our life, in our country. But the truth is, we have to have these conversations. We have to discuss the fact that every single time you get online, your family, they're at risk because people are prowling the internet as we speak, looking for information on you and your loved ones. That's how people make their money these days. That's the new scam. And guess what? Even with a private browser open, your internet service provider sees everything you do online. If that doesn't creep you out, I don't know what to tell you. Get ExpressVPN. You need to start protecting and encrypting your data. ExpressVPN.com/Jesse. ExpressVPN.com/Jesse. I know how you picture George Washington, the gentle, stoic, kind of like your grandpa in uniform. Just a humble dude. George Washington was unbelievably cocky, and George Washington would happily cut your head off if he was fighting against you. George Washington was a beast, and that's not an insult at all. He was an absolute lion in battle, absurdly courageous. One battle, he had not one but two horses shot out from underneath him. He finished the battle with four bullet holes in his coat, and none of them hit him. He was infamous for being basically impossible to kill. George Washington was a stud. And George Washington was also a huge, huge believer in deception, in spying. This is not some ignorant rube general here. This man is a pro. He was all about it. They made a history series about it. I don't know if it was any good. I think it was called Washington Spies. I think the History Channel did it. But he was famous for the spy game. It's what he did so well. You know, a second thing George Washington did well, one of his specialties? He retreated. Sounds ridiculous, right? Do you know what one of the hardest things in the world to do is when it comes to battle? Know when to retreat? Be able to swallow your pride enough to retreat? And keep your men calm as you retreat. George Washington knew very early on he did not have the British numbers. He could survive losing a battle here, losing a battle there. What he could not survive was an army wipeout. I bring 5,000 men to battle. You bring 8,000 or 9,000 men to battle. We duke it out. Things are going south. I can fight on if I walk out of there with 4,000 of my 5,000 men. I get surrounded and slaughtered or surrounded and taken prisoner. I lose 5,000. There is no United States of America. Period. George Washington knew when to cut his losses and bail and knew how to keep his men calm when he did so. And remember, when you are retreating, an orderly retreat, now is no different, but especially then too, when you're fighting side by side with men, muskets, bayonets, and it's going poorly, you're giving up ground. It's not as if you turn around and run to the other end of a deserted football field. You have explosions, blood-curdling screaming. You may be wounded. Almost undoubtedly, you've seen one of your friends wounded or killed. It is the most nerve-wracking thing in the world. We're losing. There's violence everywhere. I'm about to die. Do you imagine the panic that would take? There's one story I heard. It was on the great Dan Carlin's podcast, Hardcore History. He did one on World War I. And he told this story about the Australians, and I'm not going to go into everything, but they were in a battle, but somebody was up above, and they were shooting down on the Australians, and a guy was sitting beside his friend shooting back, and his friend got a bullet shot down his throat, and the man describes what it's like watching his friend take, I think it was 20 minutes to die as he lay there twisting around in agony. That's what it looks like all around you. Do you think you would be tempted to just crap your pants and throw your weapon down and turn and sprint the other way? Oh, you would, because it's happened several times throughout history. It takes a special human being to keep you calm and organized. No, don't throw your weapon down. You back up first. Now you back up. Let's move over here orderly. It's an impressive thing. So George Washington wants New York. The Brits have a strategy at this point in the war. And remember, this is towards the end of the war. This is 1781, and here's the British strategy. You see, right now, at this point in 1781, they're frustrated. They still have the advantage, but not a huge advantage. And here's what has happened to Britain. And it's so funny, it makes total sense now, right? Britain is owning the urban areas. Areas like New York City. They have the most loyalists there. These are areas where it's easy to sink your teeth into and then defend. They are having huge problems getting any traction outside of the urban areas. So they come up with a plan. And their plan is simply this. They say, you know, We haven't done much in the South, in Georgia, in the Carolinas, in Virginia. And I bet you money, if we go down South, slap around just a little, I bet you all those Southerners are going to turn into loyalists really quickly. Eesh. Talk about not understanding people in the South. They came down South. Oh, they took Savannah. They took Charleston and promptly lost all the rest of the South. The South is now as it was then, as it always will be. The South is not a place that takes kindly to you stomping on in and deciding you own the joint. And all of a sudden, Britain finds themselves the victims of these horrible guerrilla attacks. Somebody you may know as the Swamp Fox. How sweet is that? Yeah, that was actually one of our guys. He would specialize. You know the movie The Patriot? A lot of the character in The Patriot was based off of the real-life dude, the Swamp Fox. And he would do that. He would hide out in swamps and do these horrible guerrilla attacks on the Brits and just disappear. They freaking hated him. The Brits had every intention of hanging him because they didn't consider him a regular army dude. They were going to hang him if they ever fought him, if they ever found him. That's how much they hated this dude. How sweet is that? And speaking of Britain, speaking of the movie The Patriot, you know the bad guy in that movie? The bad dude who believed in, you know, killing all the civilians and such? That was based off of a real life dude by the name of Tarleton. Now, there's no evidence he locked a bunch of people in a church and burned it to the ground. However, he was terrible to United States citizens as a policy, as an absolute policy. So, remember that name, Tarleton. We'll be back to that in a few. The British plan of taking the South wasn't working, so they had a new plan, and this is what they decided to do. Clinton, remember the head Brit in charge, takes Cornwallis, that other guy from the movie Patriot. I'm going to keep coming back to that because it's the easiest way to remember. It really was his name, Cornwallis. Tells Cornwallis, go build a sweet fort around the Chesapeake because we're going to set up shop. That's going to kind of be our southern headquarters down there. So Cornwallis goes to a place called Yorktown. Yorktown was a tiny little nothing village. I've never been there. I don't know what it is now, but understand Yorktown was nothing until they made it Yorktown. Cornwallis sees it pretty wisely, you could say beforehand. Pretty wisely decides this is a perfect strategic point because his back is to the York River. And what is the major, major, major advantage Britain has in virtually every conflict we've ever talked about? What's their major advantage, Producer Chris? That's right, the Navy. Their ships. Well, if I'm Britain and I have to build a fort, I think I'll go ahead and back up to a river where I can have my Navy just sit right behind me. Not a bad plan, right? Except there was a problem. Hang on. I despise, with the fire of 1,000 suns, I despise getting a car repair bill. Now, look, I understand that you aren't exactly excited when you get one either. Nobody's, oh, sweet, I have to fix my transmission. Nobody's ever said that, ever. But the truth is, it just grinds on me when I get unexpected money. Because it's always when you're in a bad financial spot, isn't it? Oh man, things are a little tight this month, but you know what, honey? I think we'll be okay as long as nothing happens. Well, that's pretty much a recipe for your engine blowing out the next day. But I have good news. If you have a car, truck, or SUV made from 1999 or higher, there's a chance you'll get to stop paying for car repairs. I mean that. It's called Protect My Car. You have to find out if you qualify first, and I hope you do. So find out now. Dial **1244. Again, that's **1244. Protect my car. So Cornwallis digs in because he's got a southern plan now. He heads down to York, Virginia, got the York River, Yorktown, Virginia. He has the York River at his back. He's going to build a port. He's going to build a fort. That rhymed. What, Chris? I like rhyming. I'm what you'd call an artist. All right. What? Washington is up by New York. He wants New York. However, Washington is not the only one calling the shots. Yes, he's the overall commander. The French are heavily involved with us. You ask a regular American, even a hardcore patriot, about the Revolution, and you even bring up the French, they kind of sneer at it. Oh, yeah, they sent a ship. Nah. Buddy, they were heavily involved. And they come up with an idea. Washington and the French dudes. Instead of attacking New York, instead of attacking what is strong, why don't we fake like we're going to attack New York and go down and attack Cornwallis's army at York, at Yorktown? The French wisely say, yeah, okay, I like this plan, but they all figure, well, we do have an issue, though. There's that British Navy. What do we do about that? They come up with a plan. And the plan involves the Caribbean. Did you know that? You see, the French, remember how I told you the British loved Jamaica? The French were heavily involved in the Caribbean as well. Caribbean, Caribbean. I'm going to say it both ways because I don't know the appropriate way. And I don't use words right. The French, in frankly what is a shocking, shocking level of communication and coordination, get a hold of their Caribbean fleet and tell them this. We need you to sneak out of there and sail on up the coastline to help us with our attack on the British. Now, when I say shocking, we lose sight of how communication worked back then, how long it took to get places back then. Do you know to and from Britain, it would either take 6 weeks or 3 months, depending on which direction you're going because of the currents? Consider that. If you want to send a message of any kind to the king or him back to you, bare minimum, it's a month and a half from the time it leaves him to the time it gets to you. They're not sending smoke signals across the Atlantic. There's no cell phones, text messages, emails, fax machines, or anything else. It has to be by hand. Now consider you have an army. Pull up a map, unless you're driving. Don't crash. Pull up a map and look at New York City. Now look at the distance from New York City to the middle of the water in the Caribbean. Consider the coordination it takes to get a message from your people down to the French Navy in the Caribbean, and get this. You can't just leave until he gets a message back to you. But they do it. Chris just said it's 1,500 miles. 1,500 miles, mind you, of, well, how are we getting this message there? Do you ever think about that? I don't know why I think about these things. I know this is ridiculous. I didn't mean to get sidetracked on it. How'd the message get there? You probably had to try to sail it, maybe, but what do you do if a British naval vessel finds you and blows you out of the water? Okay, so we can't sail it. All right. We'll just send a rider on horseback. I know they never talk about this in a movie, but a horse can't ride 1,500 miles. You can't just ride a horse 100 miles a day till the end of time. The horse will die. The Mongols, you know, I always talk about the Mongols. We like to picture the Mongols on horseback. They're these horse archers. Yeah, they all took like five or six horses with them, not one, because they knew they always had to rotate them out for fresh ones. And as you're making your way, I know I'm going off on how to get the message there. I just find it amazing. And as you're making your way from New York down to the Caribbean, you're not exactly making your way down safe paved roads. The country is at war. In fact, because of the message you're carrying, there is a reasonable chance if you're caught, you will be hanging from a tree by the end of the day. Maybe worse if the Indians catch you. And the message has to go back. Fascinating, right? I always find it fascinating. And here's what Washington does. He doesn't want the Brits to reinforce Cornwallis in Virginia. He gets his sign off that the French are going to send their fleet up. So what Washington does, I love this stuff. Washington creates a bunch of fake dispatches that discuss his next move, and that his next move is going to be to move south, just a little south into New Jersey. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to head to New Jersey and fool these stupid British people. That's basically what his letter said. And then he made sure the letter fell into the hands of the British. How great is that? Now Clinton is up there in charge of this huge New York force, and he's thinking, this idiot. All right, he's going to move a little south. I know we can't see him anymore, but I know where he is. We just got the letter. Nope. In one of the great military logistical maneuvers of all time, they still study it in war colleges today, Washington force marches his entire force and the French with him down to Yorktown. That French fleet that took off from the Caribbean, they eventually get caught, or I should say found out. The British down in the Caribbean look around one day and say, where did the French fleet go? Did anyone see the French fleet? Hey, Marty, did you see the French fleet? I haven't seen them. Uh-oh. If they're going north, that's a very big deal. The British take off trying to find the fleet because, again, remember, this is not the era of satellite images and radar. If you have a huge fleet takeoff, it's a big ocean. There's no telling where that thing might be. Eventually, they do find them after accidentally passing them. And in one of the rarest things to ever happen to the Brits, they lose a naval battle. Now, before we've even fired a shot at Yorktown, Cornwallis is finished and he doesn't even know it, because now you have that gigantic body of water behind you and there's no British Navy about to sail up it to save you. So that huge body of water that was your strength beforehand just became your weakness. Washington and the French troops get to Yorktown, surround Cornwallis, and begin a siege. Cornwallis, well, his men are going hungry. You know, how many sieges have I talked to you about before? That's how it goes. Remember, that's the point of a siege, but historically, whenever you hear me or anyone else talk about a siege, always remember, a siege is an ugly bit of business. Picture your home, you and your family. Picture your home being surrounded by enemy troops. There's no way out or you'll be shot. Boom, survive with what's in your house. You're probably okay for a while. What's that look like when you're staring across the room and your kids are saying, Dad, I'm hungry? a siege is an ugly bit of business. Hang on. Knocked out another amazing night's sleep last night. I'm on quite a streak now. I'd like to take all the credit, as you know I do. But I suppose I should probably give some credit to EbSleep. Remember, it's not pills. It's a wearable device. You put it on your head, and what it does is it provides precise, continuous cooling to your forehead area, and that's the area keeping you awake. That's the area those thoughts are just racing through. Go get an EbSleep. You are not going to believe how much better you feel when you try one. You can try it risk-free for 60 days, for Pete's sake. Just try one. Go to tryeb.com/Jesse. That's tryebb.com/Jesse. Don't forget, use the promo code Jesse when you check out. Get you $25 off. Go save some money. Buy an EbSleep. Start sleeping today. They begin to pound the British at Yorktown. A young man by the name of Alexander Hamilton, maybe you've heard of him before. He was Washington's right-hand man. Yeah, he did a lot of the pounding. He was a stud militarily. He's a lot more than some stupid play they came up with about him. Hamilton, Washington, they start beating the crap out of the British, and the French are right there with us, just as many French at this battle as Americans. We start out about 600 yards from Yorktown, and how it basically works in these sieges back then is you have your trenches and cannons, and you're pounding away at them, and you're basically inching forward the stuff you use for cover, because they're shooting back. You're inching that forward and constantly advancing your trenches forward. We pound them to dust. Finally, one day, what was apparently quite a sight, a drummer appears from Yorktown. Oh, before I get to that, I almost forgot to mention, if you want to talk about the history's worst luck in the world, Cornwallis decides he's going to save his troops very wisely one night and slip out the back of the place and cross the river behind him. Remember, he has this huge river behind him? He's going to cross the river and escape, hops in the boats, they take off, and I swear, obviously, it has to be from God, a massive squall and storm rises up and blows him back into Yorktown. How amazing is that? All right, finally. A drummer appears. An officer is standing behind the drummer waving a white flag. Some say a white handkerchief. Again, it's weird how you can never get what it actually was. I'm assuming this is a huge moment. I read 10 different things on it. Some say a handkerchief. Some say a flag. Walks over. They begin negotiating the terms of surrender. Finally, Cornwallis surrenders. And one of the best salty things from George Washington I've ever heard of, Cornwallis refuses to show up himself to give up his sword at the official surrender because he claims he was sick. So instead, he sends his second in command. His second-in-command shows up to George Washington, tries to give Washington his sword. Washington refuses to take it because he's only the second-in-command and sends him to Washington's second-in-command. No, you can give it to that guy. I only deal with the boss here. I'm the boss. Go get your boss. If we're dealing with subordinates there, go talk to mine. Give him your sword. I don't want your jerk-off second-in-command sword. That's so salty. Washington did this all over the place during the war. He was great at this kind of saltiness. I believe it was Nathan Hale who was, the British hung him. Washington promptly hung a Brit. During, I believe it was the fall of Charleston, the Brits would, see, here's the problem. The Brits still, many of them, and they weren't necessarily wrong from their point of view, they viewed us as not a separate nation at war with them. They viewed us as a rebellious part of Britain. And so that's part of the reason the atrocities took place. And it's part of the reason it got very ungentlemanly sometimes. They were, in their minds, putting down a rebellion. We were fighting for freedom. They were putting down a rebellion. You know, because you listen to my show, how do you put down rebellions usually throughout history? Ugly. Ugly. So when our troops surrendered, I believe it was Charleston. Instead of allowing them to, you know, keep their weapons and walk out honorably with their weapons pointed up, which was considered the honorable thing to do. All of our guys have surrendered. Allow them to march out with their muskets pointed in the air. The Brits made our guys flip their muskets over, which is a huge, huge disgrace for armies back then, and march out with their muskets pointed down. The Brits surrender at Georgetown, promptly request that George Washington allow them to march out with their muskets pointed up. George Washington says, nah, go ahead and flip those over and point them down. Then you can walk out. I love that, dude. I love that. Washington never forgot that stuff. Finally, remember Tarleton? The bad guy from the Patriot? It was customary back then to have a banquet with the enemy officers after you've defeated them. So Washington throws a banquet, a meal, I don't know how elaborate it was, and invites obviously Cornwallis and everybody over there. You invite all the officers. We all sit down and dine together like gentlemen, talk about the battle we just won and lost, so on and so forth. He invited everyone but Tarleton. Because of his atrocities, Tarleton was not welcome at the banquet. Salty. What happened at Yorktown? I'll tell you in a second. What happened at Yorktown was simply this. Cornwallis formed a plan, and his plan, it relied on those naval vessels having his back. He formed a plan that involved other people performing and performing well. The other people did not perform well. The other people performed poorly. Cornwallis loses Yorktown and frankly loses the American Revolution. It did not end right after this, by the way. That's just from the movies, but that's pretty much was the last gasp. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we have right now, you and I have way, way too much reliance on other people. On other people to come save us, on other people to solve our problems, and those people are never coming. In fact, many of those people are working against you. I'll explain in a second.
Jesse Kelly Show.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
I'm Joe Gatto.
I'm Steve Byrne.
We are Two Cool Moms.
We certainly are.
And guess where we could find us now?
Oh, I don't know. The iHeart Podcast Network?
That's right. We're an official iHeart Podcast, and I'm super excited about it.
I am too.
I thought Two Cool Moms was such a fun podcast, but now it's even more funner and cooler and heartier.
That's right. It's more iHeartier.
I knew it.
Check your heart rate. We're here at iHeart.
Yeah, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts or on the iHeart Radio app.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Katie Couric. You know, lately I've been overwhelmed by the whole wellness industry. So much information out there about flaxseed, pelvic floor, serums, and anti-aging. So I launched a newsletter. It's called Body and Soul, to share expert-approved advice for your physical and mental health. And guess what? It's free. Just sign up at katiecouric.com/bodyandsoul. That's KATIECOURIC.com/bodyandsoul. I promise it will make you happier and healthier.
This is Michael Rappaport, and I have been professionally podcasting for 10 years. The podcast game has changed so much, and if you're looking for the most disruptive podcast in the world, then subscribe to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast today. We're talking sports, politics, pop culture, entertainment, and anything that catches my attention. Listen to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Laurie Santos, host of the Happiness Lab podcast. As the U.S. elections approach, it can feel like we're angrier and more divided than ever.
Please stick to policy. Don't get personal.
But in a new, hopeful season of my podcast, I'll share what the science really shows, that we're surprisingly more united than most people think.
We all know something is wrong in our culture, in our politics, and that we need to do better and that we can do better.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.